Okay, I'd like to open the meeting for the House Committee on Business and Labor for February 13th, 2013. Before we get going, a couple of things. Since this is a committee that has a lot of bills, and a lot of bill will be hearing and having work sessions and trying to get through, I'd like to ask that those who have requested bills that have now been referred to this committee to please communicate with either myself or the committee administrator if there's a reason the bill is not ready to be scheduled. As I say, our workload's pretty high, and what we're doing is, not that my former teacher is coming out in me, but I will give you 2 weeks to get your assignment done. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, we just want to make sure that we don't, at the end, not give proper time for all of the bills before our deadlines to be heard and to be properly vetted.
Madam Chair, yes, maybe I could add, you would hopefully encourage them to talk to their colleagues as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Pass the word.
Yeah, pass the word.
Yes, pass the word. Okay, we're ready. I'd like to open the public hearing on House Bill 2590. Jan, if you give us a summary of the bill.
Madam Chair and committee members, this bill clarifies the respective applications of the Uniform Commercial Code and the Federal Electronic Funds Transfer Act to remittance transfers.
Okay. We have three people signed up to testify. First, if Elaine Shetterly, if you could come up.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Representative Burton, good to see you this morning. My name is Lane Shetterly. I'm here to testify on behalf of House in support of House Bill 2590. I'm sorry I couldn't bring my friend Professor Bierre with me today to share with you some of the intricacies of the bill, but let me suffice to say that it is a bill that re-coordinates state and federal law in the area of remittance transfers. Article 4A of the Uniform Commercial Code governs wire transfers between banks, that is customers of banks, bank to banks, and there's a particular type of wire transfer called a remittance transfer that involves overseas exchange. Federal law used to deal exclusively with remittance transfers. State law dealt with other wire transfers. Federal law has recently changed the Electronic Funds Transfer Act of 1978 so that it bleeds a little bit into state law. And this bill re-coordinates the Uniform Commercial Code so that it clarifies when federal law applies, when state law applies. The details of that are in my written testimony. I would be happy to go further into the details of that if you like. I can tell you this is not a difficult or controversial bill. It is important, though, for the banking system and for customers of the banking system that use remittance transfers in order to have clarity as to which law, federal or state, applies to what types of transfers. And so in that respect, it's a very important bill. But one that you're likely not going to be seeing in the overflow hearing rooms on as this bill makes its way through the Capitol. I should just say that this does come to you from the Uniform Law Commission. I'm a member of the Uniform Law Commission. The Uniform Law Commission is an organization of states that promulgates laws that don't themselves become effective, but that go out to the legislatures to adopt. And through the adoption by legislatures, then we create a more uniform system of state laws based on state action in areas where uniformity is important. And certainly in commercial transactions, uniformity of the law is critical for interstate and international commerce. So with that, I will leave my written testimony. I think you've got some other supporting testimony from the banks here this morning. I'm pleased to have their support for this bill. It is important. And I would note that there is an amendment that we have requested when we had the LC draft of this prepared. It had two sections, the section two being an emergency clause. For some reason, that got dropped off when the bill was printed. I understand Ms. Nordland has requested, and you have an amendment. And I know we're in public hearing today and not work session, but I'd ask you to be sure and get that in. Mm-hmm. It is important because federal law has already taken effect. So right now, there is a little bit of disconnect between federal and state law. So as soon as we can get this through with the emergency clause, it'll be important to have us reconnected so that we are coordinated with federal law in the area of these wire transfers. With that, Madam Chair, I will end my testimony, but be happy to answer any questions.
Do you have any questions of Mr. Shetterly? Okay, thank you very much for the presentation. The next two people signed up, Elliot Dale and Tim Martinez. And if you make sure you identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Tim Martinez here on behalf of the Oregon Bankers Association. With me this morning is Elliot Dale, counsel for the Oregon Bankers Association. Many of you who have been here for a while are used to seeing Ken Sherman, Jr., who is also counsel for the bankers. He was unable to join us, so he sent his associate, and I would just ask you to please be gentle. This is Elliot's first time testifying before the legislature, so don't ask him too many hard questions, or if you do, I'll have to go sit in the audience and let him deal with them himself. As Mr. Shetterly said, we do support this legislation. We work with uniform law commissioners on UCC bills all the time. We think this is a good one. It is needed. It is needed quickly if possible, because this is one of the results of the Dodd-Frank bill of a few years ago and requires state action to conform. So with that, I would let Mr. Dale say a few words about the bill. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Dale.
Thank you. I don't have a lot to say that would add anything new to what Mr. Shetterly said earlier, except that this is a non-controversial bill, and it aligns Oregon law with federal law as amended by the Dodd-Frank.
Okay. Would you do need to identify yourself for the record?
Sorry. My name is Elliot Dale from on behalf of the Oregon Bankers Association.
Thank you very much.
And the Oregon Bankers Association supports this bill.
Okay. Any questions of the panel? Well, you got off pretty easy for your first time.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Anyone else speaking on this bill? Okay, seeing none, I close the public hearing on House Bill 2590. And I open the public hearing on House Bill 2613. We'll put player swap here. Okay, Kate, if you could read a summary of the bill, please.
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2613 provides that forms of live or historical racing possibly resulting in a wagering pool being carried forward to future race are forms of mutual wagering, authorizes the Oregon Racing Commission to adopt rules identifying permissible offerings. There's we don't have fiscal revenue, and there's no subsequent referral.
Okay, fine. Thank you. First person, we have two people to be called up first, Mike Dewey and Scott
DeRuri.
Thank you, DeRuri.
You're welcome.
I'm so bad at names, you guys. I've butchered every name that's come up. Thank you. Remember, identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Mike Dewey on behalf of Portland Meadows, and thank you for bringing this bill to a public hearing. We appreciate it very much. In that it's a public hearing only, we will be hopefully bringing an amendment to the bill. It's not, the language isn't totally correct from our perspective. Scott DeRuti is the vice president of the Stronach Group. They are the owner and operator of Portland Meadows, which is a racetrack in northeast Portland. Hopefully you have, for those that are electronic, you have the, and I think the staff has been wonderful to work with here to provide the electronic version to you of Scott's presentation and also the economic development report that we did about a year ago. The racing industry in Oregon is about a $138 million industry. This is an Eco Northwest report. 700 plus full-time jobs, 484 indirect jobs, 1,100 licensees at the various tracks that are regulated by the Racing Commission. I was struck in some ways by the OLA system here and how you're changing technology to present the testimony that is going to be before you, and we are hoping to use our technology, and Mr. Drudy will talk a little bit about that. We had a 2009 Court of Appeals case that discussed what live racing was, and we lost that particular case was not appealed to the Oregon Supreme Court. So we come to the Oregon legislature asking for us to be able to deploy our technology using racing, pari mutuel racing. We're not talking about the lottery or a casino type of wagering. We're talking about pari mutuel wagering. And we believe at the end of the day, because other states have done this, we would be able to help the industry in the area of those that breed horses in Oregon, own horses, the entire industry around it, the county fair race meets, and we're going to be able to pay, which would help us more in purses to attract higher quality horses to our race meet. You also have, Dave Nelson had a doctor's appointment, and he asked me to just be sure that you have from the Oregon Quarter Horse Association their support for this bill. So, Madam Chair, if you don't mind, we'll ask Mr. DeRudy to go through the presentation that you have in terms of the historical racing proposal that we have before you, and then we'll be happy to answer any questions. Thank you. Thank you.
Again, for the record, my name is Scott DeRudy. I'm with the Stronach Group. Our chairman is a gentleman by the name of Frank Stronach, who has a passion for horse racing and has invested significantly in horse racing across the country. We own 6 racetracks throughout the country. We own a number of technology companies related to horse racing, and want to see the business succeed. Our chairman built one of the largest and most profitable auto parts manufacturing companies in the world that has roughly $25 billion a year in sales and 80,000 employees across the globe. That's his business. Horse racing is his passion, and that's why he's invested so heavily in this sport and wants to see it grow and succeed. In many areas, horse racing is thriving. We have a racetrack in Miami. We have a racetrack in Southern California that are two of the best tracks in the world. And draw wagering dollars from across the globe. Our track in Miami, for example, has roughly $600 million annually bet on its races from locations throughout the world. Portland Meadows, on the other hand, is not doing quite so well. We got involved in Oregon back in roughly 2000 when we purchased Multnomah Greyhound Track and also Portland Meadows, and wanted to see the business here and the jobs that it supports thrive. But unfortunately, there were tough economic times here. At one point, we had to make the decision to close down the Greyhound Track, which, as you all know, no longer exists. And so we are very committed to seeing Portland Meadows survive and are looking for solutions to help it grow its business. As we look to other markets and some of the things that have been successful helping horse racing there, one thing is this product called Instant Racing. Instant Racing is a product that's been introduced in Kentucky, which, of course, is the home of the horse racing industry. It's been introduced in Arkansas, and there are also other legislatures across the country considering similar bills as you're looking at today. So that sort of begs the question, of course, what is instant racing? And just by brief background, one of the criticisms we as an industry often receive is that we haven't adapted very well, that we haven't adopted technology, that we're having trouble attracting new demographics to, younger demographics to our racetracks. Horse racing is a very data-intense sport or hobby. If you're into it, there's a lot of information available. You can study it. It's sort of like the person, some people might like to go to a baseball game and have a hot dog and watch it, and some people really drill down into the statistics and want to know everybody's on base average and everything else. Well, horse racing is a little similar to that, although we haven't always done a great job presenting our product to the new player, the younger player, the novice customer. And so what Instant Racing does is it brings modern technology and it presents our product through modern technology to the customer in a way that especially the younger demographic is used to seeing on a screen through technology and at a much quicker pace. I'd like to turn briefly to presentation you have in front of you, and I know you all have it, so I'll go quickly through it and certainly could answer questions when I'm finished. But the basic concept of horse racing in Oregon goes back, you know, to the early 1930s, and as you all know, horse racing has a wagering component to it, and key to that is that the wagering take place on what is called a parimutuel basis. In other words, it is not a house-banked game. If you go to a casino or you play the Oregon Lottery, you're betting against the operator. Either you win and they lose, or they win and you lose. Horse racing is not conducted in a similar fashion. It's what's called parimutuel, which means all the players are playing against each other. The house receives a set percentage as its fee to operate the business, but you're not betting against the house. That's key to horse racing. It's key to how wagering in Oregon on horse racing has always been conducted. And importantly, that's exactly how instant racing works. If you look back to the early days of wagering in Oregon, there were very limited types of bets you could place. You could place a bet to have a horse win, to have a horse come in second, or to have a horse come in third. And that was basically it. And of course, we're talking about a time when there wasn't computers, there wasn't technology, and there were literally people in the back room calculating the payoffs on the bets. I don't know how they did it, but somehow or other they managed to do it. As technology grew, those betting options that we now offer at the track grew. So we have used technology in to some extent to where you can now bet much more complicated bets. You can bet, for example, a pick six, which says you have to pick six races in a row. Each horse is going to come in first in each of those six races. It's not very easy to do, but of course, if you do it, you win a fair amount of money. There are a number of technology advances we have adopted throughout the years. We view instant racing as simply an extension of that, one more technological advance that we would like to use to present our product. What is instant racing? At its core, it is a system whereby you can wager on races that took place in the past. Licensed races, real races that took place at licensed regulated parimutuel facilities, but they happened in the past. I know the question, well, wait a minute. Don't we know who won? That might be the only way I could pick a winner, is if I did know who won. But unfortunately for me, that's not how the instant racing system works. The betting options are presented anonymously. So in other words, if there's a race that takes place at Portland Meadows this afternoon, I'll receive a program that has the names of the 10 horses, and their related handicapping information. And of course, based on the names, I might recognize them. Maybe Secretariat's one of the horses, and I say, well, that's really great.
We would hope.
It might be a little difficult.
In the case of instant racing, because they're historic races and because we want to make sure that everybody has a level playing field, the horses are just presented by their number. You have horse number one, horse number two, horse number three, et cetera. The handicapping information for the horse is presented, the actual handicapping information that existed on the day that the horse ran. So you can use that information in handicap, but again, that's presented in an anonymous fashion so that you know the relative strength of the horses, but you can't determine which any what is the name or what is the identity of any single horse. And using that horse racing at handicapping data, you then select your horses, you place your wager, and at that point you are allowed to see the race that took place and find out whether you won or you lost. Now, why is this important to us? Why do we think this is going to help the industry, and why is it any better or any different than what we do today? Well, there's a couple of reasons. First of all, the technology presents the races to a way to a new customer that is much less intimidating than the current racetrack experience. If you go to the racetrack today, there's again a lot of numbers, a lot of data. You can get a racing form, which is a newspaper printed with more data than you could possibly absorb. You're going to go up to a parimutuel window and you're going to place your bet with a clerk, and there's going to be three people in line behind you, and they're going to be hurrying to get their bet in, and you're going to feel all this pressure, and sometimes new fans tell us it's kind of an intimidating experience. With instant racing, it's different. you can bet at your own leisure. You can take as much time or as little time as you want. You have a tote machine, which the way betting takes place paramutually is through a technology called the tote technology. When you walk up to a window today at the racetrack and you place your bet, the clerk will enter the data into a terminal, and that terminal takes all the bets that are taking place across the world, and they combine it, and that's how the odds are determined. Well, this, you have your own machine that you can sit at, and we have some of them today at the track. They're called self-service terminals where you can place your own wager, but they look like dinosaurs, frankly. This is presented in a much more entertaining and dynamic way. So it's less intimidating, and it presents information to the players in a way that is easier to grasp the sport. There is a slide on your in your presentation, and you see these pie charts here, and basically what the pie charts do is they take actual handicapping data. For example, how much has this horse won in its lifetime, which is an indicator of how good the horse is, and it presents that data in pie chart format. And if you're looking at these charts before you, you notice that each one of these slices in the pie chart has a number 1 through 10. That corresponds to horse number 1 through 10. So by looking at these charts, you can now, in a very simple and very quick fashion, which is easier for new people to absorb, say, well, I like the 8, or I like the 9, or the 10 has a big slice of this pie chart, and I think that one's important. That's how you place your wager. So one other fact that I think is important to mention, we did have instant racing in Oregon and did operate it back in the 2003 timeframe. That was when we the Stronach Group were operating both Portland Meadows and Multnomah Greyhound. We had approval of the Oregon Racing Commission, and we had our own legal opinions from counsel saying that it did comply with existing Oregon law. We put those machines in. We operated them for a period of time. For business reasons, we took them out. At the time, the reason was our chairman, as I mentioned earlier, big believer in live racing, big advocate of the sport. He wanted to see if we could create a similar type of experience using live races. And we had another product that we tried to introduce. Because of the timing problems of running live races and all that goes into putting on a live event, it did not work. And so we decided, you know, we tried it with live, let's go back to the historic races. We went back to the Oregon Racing Commission in the 2007 timeframe, asked them again for approval. At that point, even though it had already been approved and already been operating, somebody in the AG's office raised the legality question. We went through the process, and ultimately a court said, you know, it doesn't fit under the statute as it's drafted today. So that's why we're back before you as Mike said, asking for some cleanup modifications to the paramutual statute. So, you know, again, we believe this is going to help the racing industry in several key ways. One, it's going to bring more people to the racetrack. Two, it's going to introduce racing to a younger demographic in a way that they can quickly understand and then grow to be fans of the sport. And three, it's going to help us generate dollars that we then can put back into our purse account, which leads more people to want to own horses, more people to want to breed horses, more people to want to take care of horses in the state of Oregon and run them at Portland Meadows to win those prizes. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of the panelists?
If I may, very quickly, two other points. One is Portland Meadows did invest some money in a facility to house these, we'll call them machines, the instant racing machines. And so that is kind of sitting there silent as we go through this process because of the AG's opinion and the subsequent court decision. And also, because when I talked to some of you about this, you were curious about how this worked. Right now there are about 200,000 races that we have cataloged, and they keep growing over time. So it's a significant number of races at this point. So I want to just point that out.
Okay, well, I have some questions, just how it works. So in other words, it's kind of like a slot machine, but horses are running? Is that, I'm looking at the visuals that you have on here.
Well, the device you're sitting at and placing your bets on is a tote terminal on the existing pari-mutuel tote machine. And the distinction is, if you were to unplug that device and take it home and try to play it, it wouldn't work because it has to be tied into the whole system. It would be a little bit like trying to sit and play poker by yourself. You can't do it. You need to be playing against other players. On the other hand, a slot machine, as you know, is sort of self-contained, and you could take it home and play it. So that's one key distinction. But as far as the presentation to the customer, it is presented in a screen format that you sit at one screen, and these are some screenshots. Mm-hmm. Of the game, and ultimately what happens is, look, again, we live in a visual electronic society, and we've tried to present horse racing now in a form that a younger generation is used to looking at. So yeah, there's different graphics. Ultimately, you can see in the center of these slides, there's a television screen. Mm-hmm. Where the race, once you've placed your bet, where the race actually runs, and you can watch your race. So I don't know if that answers your question or not.
Well, it doesn't look like this. At the end, it looks like they say what race it was. After you've placed
your wager, then it does tell you, here was the race, here was the location, here was the date, and you get to watch the race.
I do have a couple of other questions. Assuming this is going to be, you know, some sort of a success to try to deal with other demographics, are these terminals going to be put into off-site betting, you know, off-track betting facilities, or is it just going to stay? I haven't read the bill that specifically, or is it just going to stay at the Meadows?
Well, our initial plan is to have them at Portland Meadows. We spent a considerable amount of money building a nice room there where people could be comfortable, and we think, you know, part of it is the again, our chairman has set the direction for us. He wants to see horse racing succeed. So the goal is to bring people to Portland Meadows. The goal is to have another entertainment activity while they're there. The goal is to generate money that helps purses and helps the horsemen. But ultimately, if they're at Portland Meadows, they're going to look outside and they're going to see the real horses. Mm-hmm. And I've yet to bring a person to any racetrack who's new, who hasn't been taken by the beauty of the sport and watching the horses, and there's a natural connection that people have with horses. So we think by bringing them to Portland Meadows, it's going to ultimately help grow the sport. So your question is, what are our plans? Our plans are to introduce them into Portland Meadows.
Mm-hmm. And there's no, I mean, I can't have you look into future, but so it's more just kind of a marketing tool to bring people into the Meadows.
That's what the
goal is right now.
Yes.
Okay. Do you have to come back to us if that goal is changing and it's going to be moving to other sites? Or
I think, let me try to answer the question this way. I think if there is a concern that you have or that others have that, well, this activity might be okay at the racetrack, but we don't want to see it in OTBs throughout the state, I mean, that's not our goal right now. So if that were something that was built into the bill, I mean, I think, you know, we're not looking to be able to put them in the OTBs. Mm-hmm. So I suppose whatever rights you grant to us, you can limit in whatever way you see fit.
And if I may, Madam Chair, OTBs are the off-track wagering betting sites. The statute says,
unfortunately, I knew what that was.
Yeah.
Or fortunately.
Yeah. And the statute provides not more than 20. We have substantially less than that. So it doesn't fit into the grand business plan at this point. So we, as I said, the bill is not yet ready for prime time language-wise, so we can have that discussion.
Okay. And I assume that there are safeguards. I mean, with these machines, I know that the lottery, and there are certain safeguards that we have for machines and bars and that kind of thing, are the same sort of safeguards with these machines that, you know, so they're not rigged or...
Yes, definitely. I think two questions. Where I thought you were going to go was in terms of access. So I'll answer that question even though you didn't really ask it. In terms of age, you know, verification and whatnot, obviously
oh, okay.
at the racetrack,
All of the safety aspects.
Yeah, at the racetrack, there's two ways you can bet currently. One is through handing your money to a live person at the window. Another is through the existing self-service terminals that are already there, and we have systems and processes in place to monitor in both of those aspects that somebody's, you know, truly the right age, and those same safeguards would carry over to these self-service instant racing terminals. So then the question that you did ask, as far as the integrity of the machines themselves, first of all, they're tote technology, so it's the same technology that's currently in use at the track, and when somebody places a bet, all they're doing with that machine is communicating back to this communication system the amount of their bet, and it's that communication system that then divides up all the bets among the players and makes sure the right payback.
Okay.
So that technology exists today. It is regulated by the Oregon Racing Commission today, and it would certainly be our expectation and our hope that the Oregon Racing Commission would continue to regulate and oversee the tote aspect of the instant racing machines, just as they do of the regular current tote machines.
Okay. Got it. Thank you. Any other questions?
If I may, Madam Chair, just real quick, a warning for everybody. As you've heard him present, the guy who started this had an auto parts store of billions of dollars. And as someone who's owned a horse, if you go in and start liking this, your billions does go down to millions relatively quickly. Owning horses.
Expensive hobby, are you saying?
It can be.
Yes.
Winners until your money runs out.
Okay. Any other questions of the panel? Okay, see.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. You want these two together? Okay, signed up to speak is Linnell Smith and Gay Welliver. Thank you.
Welliver.
Thank you. I'm sure when you introduce yourselves, we will have it for the record. Someday I'm not going to butcher people's names. Then.
Good morning, representatives. I'm Linnell Smith. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders Association, or OTOBA for short. We are offering testimony today in support of Bills 2613 and 2614. The OTOBA was established in 1944 with the mission to increase public interest in horse racing through the promotion and breeding and advancement of the breeding of Oregon Thoroughbreds. We have proudly been serving the racing community for 69 years. The OTOBA is a small, not-for-profit organization. Our income is derived from Portland Meadows and the Oregon Racing Commission based on wagering and the taxes on wagering. Our purpose is to redistribute these funds to the horsemen and women who breed and own Oregon-bred thoroughbreds in the form of purse supplements, incentive programs, awards, and services. We support racing at Portland Meadows and five county fairs, including the Eastern Oregon Livestock Show in Union, the Tillamook County Fair in Tillamook, the Crooked River Roundup in Prineville, the Josephine County Fair in Grants Pass, and the Harney County Fair in Burns. Our premier event is Oregon Championship Day at Portland Meadows. This is the only day during the race meet that every race is exclusively for Oregon-bred thoroughbreds and quarter horses. Oregon Championship Day is truly an all-Oregon event. Our owners and breeders come from across the state. Breeding and owning thoroughbreds is a way of life in Oregon. There are approximately 350 breeders and 400 owners of Oregon-bred thoroughbreds in this state. They provide jobs and they contribute to their local economies. Without horse racing at Portland Meadows, these owners and breeders suffer. They become unable to provide for their families, their employees, and their communities. And eventually, they are gone. I am proud to introduce you to the president of the OTOBA. She has served on our board for 13 years, and she is a lifelong horsewoman. Please meet Gay Welliver.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am Gay Welliver, and I am president of the Oregon Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders, but I'm also representing the other half of the racing community in our state. the horsemen, breeders, owners, trainers, and all the other independents. We exist in a symbiotic relationship with the commercial race facility. We are dependent on Portland Meadows to get our product to market. They're dependent on us to have a product, but it is a truly symbiotic relationship. County fairs are dependent on the horsemen and Portland Meadows to prepare that product to distribute to the local communities when they have their little 3-5-day race meets in their counties. Portland Meadows is urban. It's the city. Raising, breeding, racehorses, that's rural. We're an ag-based industry. The breeding and raising of a racehorse is the conditioning, the production of a professional athlete. It's the most expensive, labor-intensive, and time-consuming of animal husbandry products. In 2008, our organization did a survey of our membership, and we found the average farm was 40 acres, and the average equine holding was 10 horses. The farms with 40 or more acres tended to have 2 full-time employees. The smaller ones had part-time employees. Okay, when you're making a racehorse, you're making a professional athlete. And a racehorse is the Maserati of the equine world. He's very high maintenance, serious high maintenance. He requires premium feed and all sorts and lots of attending personnel. The industry is dependent on farmers who raise oats, hay, straw, and then there's a specialty support staff that goes beyond that, feed stores, tack stores, farriers, veterinarians, trainers, jockeys, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, down the road. All of us are dependent on Portland Meadows for our livelihood and for a place to display our product. I've mentioned expense and labor intensive. Well, it's also time consuming. I'm going to give you a quick preview of what a racehorse kind of is and the time involved with him. Mm-hmm. In this example, on December 2008, a breeder purchased a stallion season at a charity auction on Oregon Day in Portland. In April of 2009, that breeder took his mare to a stallion farm in Dallas, Oregon. She was bred. In April 2010, the resulting foal was born. The mare also went, mare and foal went that year also to another farm in another town to be bred to a different stallion. But we're just going to talk about this colt. For the next 2 years, that owner breeder did everything in his power to create a professional athlete. Then, in March of 2012, he sent him to a breaking farm in North Plains, Oregon, to get broke, saddle broke, learn a few manners enough to make him marginally accessible to a rider. And then he went to the racetrack at Portland Meadows. For the next 6 months, his trainer, which is like a professional coach, had intense training on him and conditioning to get him ready for a race. On October 20th, 2012, after 6 months, which is a very short time frame, this was an unusual example, after 72 seconds after the gate opened, this horse crossed the finish line. That doesn't happen very often, but that's the goal we're all working at. And that's a 4-year time frame with a resulting 72-second, you know, there it is in 72 seconds. He wasn't the only horse in this race. There were 9 horses in the race, and there were 10 horses that day. And when you think about all the people that went in to get him where he is, the groom, the stall cleaner, the trainer, the exercise rider, the pony rider, the veterinarian, all the feed, everything that went into him, each one of those horses that day had that base underneath them. There's a huge economic impact into raising a racehorse. About half of them achieve that in their 2-year-old year. Some take a whole other year in that time frame. They're actually a 5-year investment. Some never even reach the winner's circle. And in that case, it's a disappointing investment. Along with the economic impact of horse racing, I think that there's a cultural impact as well. Humans have had a fascination with horses since the dawn of time. This nation evolved off the back of a horse, and horse racing is the oldest spectator sport. We need to do everything we can in conjunction with Portland Meadows to keep this industry alive within the state. It's truly a community. We are all codependent on each other, and we need this legislation, both these bills, to go forward.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Are there any questions of the panelists? Okay, seeing none. Thank you very much. The next two people we have, John McCulley and Nick Lowe. Thank you, gentlemen. Make sure you state your name for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John McCulley. I'm here representing the Oregon Fairs Association, and I just wanted to add our voice in support of the legislation before you. I think you've heard plenty of information about the importance of the industry in the state. The economic impact study that was given to you shows the value and importance to rural economies from horse racing. And it's very important to understand that those race meets in Burns and Grants Pass and Prineville and Union and Tillamook would not happen without Portland Meadows. And so we are here to make sure that we can do everything we can to have Portland Meadows be strong and successful, because their success generates success in the local communities.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Lowe?
Chair Doherty and committee, for the record, my name is Nick Lowe. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Horsemen Benevolent Protective Association. We are here in support of House Bill 2613. Live racing in Oregon and numerous jobs related to it have been in jeopardy for since the inception of video lottery and the tribal casino compacts. House Bill 2613 simply allows our industry to use its own product to generate more income. Thanks for the opportunity to testify, and hope we can get this done.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of the panelists? Well, you guys got off easy today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, are there any other people here that would like to testify? We do have a testimony that has been submitted by Dave Nelson of for the board of the... It was a statement in support of 2613, and it was prepared by Dave Nelson for the board of directors of the Oregon Quarter Horse Racing Association. And that's it?
That's it.
Okay, so we do have written submission. It will be on OLIS when we can get it on OLIS. Thank you very much. Okay, anything else on this one? Hearing nothing, I close the public hearing on House Bill 2613. And I open the public hearing on House Bill 2614. Okay. Kate, if you could read with the bill, please.
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2614 increases the share of monies retained by the Oregon Racing Commission from payments received by the commission.
Okay.
Fiscal revenue, we're still waiting on, and we do have a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means on this.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Dewey?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mike Dewey on behalf of Portland Meadows. So in 1997, I had to go back and look at the statute. On behalf of the Greyhound Park, Mark Walson, who was principal, came to me and said, I've got an idea. Because of the internet and because of the, we talked about the tote pari-mutuel system, and how wagering is going to occur across the world. We talked about that a little bit earlier in 2613. He said, I have an idea by which Oregon can regulate the wagering around the world. And so we went to a committee chair late in the session. The relating clause was a good clause. And we amended the bill to provide for the multi-jurisdictional simulcasting and interactive wagering totalizator hub. We made that up. We totally made that up. And we had no clue as to whether or not these wagering hubs would come to Oregon. And they have. And just to give you an idea, there are approximately 7 or 8 hubs that operate in Oregon, and we tax those on a license fee basis and on a percentage of the handle that goes through the hub. And as best as I can estimate, the wagering through these hubs through the first 3 quarters of 2012 was $1.8 billion.
But can I ask you, these are for simulcast races?
These are races that would be run all over the world. And as technology changes, you have to, as you might take a, let's say at the Kentucky Derby or Churchill Downs, somebody is making a bet on that race. They may be making a bet on that race at an off-track facility in Oregon, at Portland Meadows. And all of those wagers go into a computer system, in this case in Beaverton, Oregon. Mm-hmm. And they are the entities that figure out all of the odds, the distribution of the money. So all of those wagers have to go into one place because they can come from all over the world. As a matter of fact, you can set up an account online with these hubs, deposit money in the account, and make a wager online. So that's where technology has taken us. So in 1997, we took a concept that had not occurred anywhere in terms of a business plan, and we said it needs to be regulated if you're going to have this activity. And Oregon was the first state to set up these wagering hubs to be regulated. And so these hubs over time all migrated to Oregon. Other states have moved in this direction. But fortunately, we are the first state to do it, and there's some loyalty when you are the first state to provide for this opportunity in terms of where technology goes. At the same time, frankly, we thought that maybe we needed to make sure that for buy-in, if you will, the state of Oregon got a percentage, or the general fund got a percentage of these revenues. And we didn't know whether or not this was going to work, so I would just say that, and we've talked to a few of you, I just said, okay, it's going to be a 66-67-33% distribution. 67% of the revenues that are derived after all the regulatory expense would go to the Racing Commission for distribution to the industry, to purses, to the county fair race meets, and the like. And 33% would go to the general fund. So based on the analysis from the Racing Commission, there is approximately over a 2-year period about $2 million that comes into the revenues to the state of Oregon. Then that distribution is 67-33. So the best fiscal we have at this time is that the general fund would lose under this approach, because it's now an 85-15 split, would be over a 2-year period, $720,000 approximately.
General fund.
360 per year. Now, I know that is teachers or health care and all of that. We're trying to figure out other ways to help the industry. We had 2613 before you. And in that, we made up this number, quite frankly, in 1997. And we wanted to be sure, at least my opinion was, that the state collected the regulatory cost of this endeavor, which has been totally, totally successful. We wanted to make sure that occurred, and that has occurred, clearly, because of the way it's taxed. It's a, for each hub, it's a $200 per day license fee, and they run almost year-round, and then there's a percentage on their handle. So the regulatory cost is taken care of, if you will. The rest is gravy to the general fund. So I thought it would be good to have a conversation. The industry thought it would be good to have a conversation about what is the right formula. Now, I'm not saying there's a lot of math between 85-15, but this was a way to take horse racing dollars and put it back into the industry. It's a direct correlation. Clearly, as you know, the bill has a referral to Ways and Means, and they do their magic down there, and I don't understand the magic, but there's a whole different set of eyes on that, but we would hope that we could continue that conversation down in Ways and Means. So I bring this bill to you, and the racing industry brings this bill to you as another tool in our toolkit.
Thank you.
thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any questions of Mr. Dewey? Fairly easy today.
Thank you.
Okay, again, I'd like to call up Linnell Smith and Gay Welliver. Or Linnell Smith.
I'm Linnell Smith. We aren't going to offer other testimony. It was just included in the previous.
Thank you very much. And John McCulley and Nick Lowe, would you like to come up or?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, John McCulley representing Oregon Fairs Association. Just wanted to put on the record that we, too, support House Bill 2614. The hub monies have come to the county fair race meets have been really important to improve safety at those tracks, to enhance facilities, and to enhance purses, and thus attract horses to the smaller race meets. So we support this bill and look forward to having the discussion in Ways and Means about it.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Nick Lowe, on behalf of the Oregon Horsemen's Benevolent Protective Association, we are in support of 2614. This bill, it's not an expansion of gambling. It's a request for handouts from the state. We are simply asking for the money generated through our industry to go back into our industry, maybe save racing. Thank you for the opportunity.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions, the gentleman? Okay, seeing none.
Thank you.
I close the hearing. Or anybody else in the audience that would like to speak? And we also have testimony in support of House Bill 2614, prepared by Dave Nelson of the Board of Directors of the Oregon Quarter Horse Racing Association. And that testimony has been submitted. Okay. And I close the hearing on House Bill 2614. Anything else? Business of the committee today? Okay, if not, I adjourn the meeting of the House Business and Labor Committee.
Quick and painless.
I like this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We don't say anything.
And then you guys are the first to be in the whatever we call it.
First to be.